Good afternoon. I'm Andre Kostopoulos. I'm the Associate Dean for Student Affairs in the Faculty of Arts. Welcome to the pre-departure orientation session for winter 2011. You're all going away, and we want to see you come back, and that's why you're here. Today, you're going to be hearing in this first plenary session. You'll be hearing from three speakers: Sylvie Fafard, who's the Deputy Director of Outreach and Partnership Programs at DFAIT, which is the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade. You should all be familiar with the DFAIT acronym. Dr. Pierre-Paul Tellier, the Director of McGill Student Health Services, and Sarah Berger-Richardson, who's a Faculty of Law student and has been involved with the McGill Internships Office for a long time and does fantastic work there. So you'll be hearing from all three of them, and then you will have regional breakout sessions. So we have professors and staff members from the university who have experience in the areas of the world in which you'll be traveling. They usually have done research there. They usually have, in many cases, lived and worked there as part of their research. And so that's your opportunity to hear from them and also to ask them any questions you may have. So the importance of being here today, I think it's easy to understand in the light of the news every day these days. Certainly you're all familiar with the disaster in Japan. We were very lucky in that while we had students in exchange to Japan, this was an intercession during which this disaster hit, and the students, none of our students who were on exchange to Japan were in Japan at that time. They were in between semesters. But this gives you an idea of, you know, the extreme version of why we want to help you prepare for your trip and why we want you to have the resources and the knowledge to deal with anything you may encounter while you're away. There are disasters that affect an entire country or an entire continent, such as, for example, the 2004 Sumatra earthquake and tsunami. There are disasters that affect one person, such as the drunk Canadian who fell off his balcony in Mexico City a few years ago. And in between, there's a whole range of scales of disaster. Now, of course, all of you, your exchanges will be stunning success stories and nothing will go wrong whatsoever. However, just on the odd chance that you end up in a difficult situation, I think the goal of today's talks and the goal of today's breakout sessions is to give you the tools to, first of all, recognize when you are about to enter into a difficult situation. Second, if you do find yourself entering a difficult situation, to give you the tools and the knowledge and the awareness you need to minimize the impact on you. And should you be involved in a real, very difficult situation that you have no control over, give you the knowledge and the resources to know what to do about it in order to get out of it, hopefully. And also, as part of the breakout sessions, to tell you a little bit of general information about what to do in your region of study, how to behave when you get there, the things you can expect, so more everyday kinds of things. But I think the goal today is really to give you the tools, the knowledge to prime you, to prepare you for what you're going to encounter. And so we have some very, very informed, knowledgeable speakers here, and we also have some breakout session leaders who are very experienced. So take advantage of their experience. Ask questions. This is the time to do it. And store away in the backs of your minds all the information that you think couldn't possibly be relevant to you, because when it does become relevant to you, it can make the difference between a very, very, very bad situation and one that's just annoying. All right? So I'll leave it up to our first speaker, who's Sylvie Fafard from DFAIT.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. Bonjour tout le monde. It's a pleasure to be here in Montreal, in my hometown, with you and here at McGill. This is a program for the next 20 or 25 minutes, I would say. I would like to give you a very brief overview of the Canadian Consular Services. I'd like to tell you who we are. I'd like to tell you what are the services that are offered in Canadian embassies abroad, the ones that are not offered. And also, and most of all, I'd like to tell you about the tools that we have put together in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years, from experience, from consular cases we had, and these are tools that are there for you. They're free, and they're there to help you. Are we okay with the sound? Yeah? Okay. Thank you. And we'll also look at a few smart travel tips. If anything is not clear during the presentation, please don't hesitate to ask. And then we can leave time, I hope so, for questions at the end. And in any case, I'll give you an email address at the end of the presentation, and you can always email your questions, and we'll find the answers for you. Okay? So let's start. I'll start with a brief definition of what consular means. It's the word used to describe the services that a government provides to its citizens when they are in a foreign country. So that's, in a nutshell, what consular means. Our mandate is twofold. The first part of our mandate is prevention, and that's what we're doing here today. We're working on our preparation for international travel. One of the reasons we think it's so important is that we've seen in the last 5 years the number of requests for assistance from Canadians abroad. That number has increased by 21%. So we felt that there is really a need for more information and for more advice before departure. And I would say that the word before is really the key word here. And I have every reason to believe that with all the recent events that you were mentioning in the Middle East, in North Africa, in Japan, and it's been going on and on since January, we've never seen so many crises going one after the other, nonstop, I have every reason to believe that this number will increase again. That doesn't mean that traveling is not a great experience. It is, absolutely. And most of the trips, I would say, go off without any problem, without a hitch. But, I mean, things happen. It could be an earthquake, as we've seen recently. It could be an accident, a car accident, illness. Could be lots of things. So this is when we are there to help in our missions, in our offices abroad. Who we are? We are actually a network of more than 260 Canadian offices in more than 150 countries around the world. In countries or regions where Canada does not have an office, we have what we call the Consular Services Sharing Agreement with Australia. So if, for example, you are in Hawaii and you need consular assistance, you can go to the Australian consulate in Honolulu, and they will provide you with services. And of course, it goes both ways. So when Australians need assistance in countries where they do not have an office, we do help them. So it goes absolutely both ways. If you want to know more about this agreement, you can check on our website. I'll give you the address later on. You can see the document itself as well as the list of countries where we help each other. And of course, if you are running for your life and the first embassy you see is the one from the UK, from the US, from France, Sweden, and so on, you just go there, ask for help, and they will contact us. I mean, this is something that we do. We do help each other all the time. Does everybody know the difference between an embassy, a high commission, and a consulate? Anybody wants to try?
Yeah?
I've never heard of a high commission before, but I'm pretty sure that an embassy, there's only one in the entire country. And the consulate is just like sort of does a lot of the consular type things that, you know, are sort of, the embassy does other diplomatic things in addition to consular things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The embassy, you can see it as the headquarters. Yeah, and it's always in the capital city of a foreign country. It's as simple as that, and this is where you'll find all the range of services. The High Commission, it's exactly the same as the embassy. It's just a matter of terminology. When the embassy is located in the capital city of a Commonwealth country, it's called the High Commission. That's all. So, if you're in London, you'll see the High Commission, it's the embassy. A consulate, like you were saying, is usually a smaller office located in major cities, but not capital cities, and the range of services can vary depending on the country where they are, on the number of Canadians we have, and on the needs there are in that country. So, in a nutshell, that's the difference between the three. Now, in Canada, our headquarters is at the Lester B. Pearson Building that you see here on the screen. It's on Sussex Drive in Ottawa, and this is where we have the Emergency Operations Center. That's the center that's been working like crazy for the last 3-4 months. It's 24/7, and it takes calls from anywhere around the world. I'll give you an example. How it works. Let's say you are in Spain. You are in Spain and it's in the middle of the night and your passport is stolen. You call the embassy right away. You call the embassy in Madrid. It's midnight. The embassy is closed. So what happens is your call is transferred automatically to the Emergency Operations Center in Ottawa. And there, the officer will take your call. And in this case, the first thing he or she'll tell you is that you need a police report for your passport being stolen. And the next day when you go to the embassy the next morning, they'll know about your situation because he or she will have sent a message telling them about your situation. Now, let's say if unfortunately you have been attacked, you have been injured, you don't speak one word of Spanish, you're by yourself and you're in distress, chances are the officer will then call his or her counterpart in Madrid for on-site assistance. So it really depends. It depends on the emergency, on the gravity of the situation, and it's on a case-by-case basis that these types of help and assistance will be evaluated. You can also call directly the Emergency Operations Center. We do accept collect calls, of course, and this is the number you have on the screen. You can also send an email, sos@international.gc.ca. We've been receiving those emails, like I was saying, hundreds of them on a daily basis recently, and we do answer and reply all of them as quickly as we can. Here I've put a few examples of the services that are offered in embassies, high commissions, and consulates. The whole list, the complete list, is in the booklet you have in your kit that's called Bon Voyage Bud, but here are just a few examples. Like we can assist in medical emergencies by providing a list of local doctors who speak English, which can be very useful sometimes when you try to describe what and where the pain is. And we can provide you with a list of local and recommended clinics or hospitals. I don't know if I have time for a story. Do I? Well, I guess so. I'll make it short. We had, like you mentioned, the balcony in Mexico. We do have a long list of cases. We call them our balcony cases in Mexico. And it got to a point where we had to mention it in the travel report for Mexico. And one of the reasons why there are so many cases is that the construction rules are not the same there, and the rails are much lower than they are here. That's one of the two reasons why we have so many cases. like in this story, this guy from Edmonton was in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, on holidays, and he did fall from his hotel balcony from the fifth floor. So as you can imagine, he was in a very, very bad condition. He was rushed to the hospital. And when he got there, the hospital there, they said, well, we need a deposit right away of $40,000 US, or a guarantee of payment before we provide the medical care that is needed. So his mother called the insurance company. He had insurance. But the insurance company refused to pay and refused to advance or guarantee any money. Guess why? That's the second reason why there are so many histories about these balconies in Mexico. Too much tequila, yes, or whatever it was, too much drink. The guy was totally drunk when he fell from the balcony. And read your insurance contract. If you are intoxicated, they won't pay. They won't advance any money. So what happened is, and his parents were unable to put all that money together in such, you know, a period of time. So what we did is we advanced the $40,000 so that at least he could get the medical care that he needed right away. Like, he had internal bleeding and he was given Tylenol. So that gives you an idea of the situation. So he got the medical care, and then we advanced another $30,000 for his medical evacuation back to Canada. So now he or his family owe a total amount of $70,000. So that's a lot of money, and believe me, it could have been even worse than that. And we're keeping his passport. There's no more Puerto Vallarta until all the money is paid back. So that story, a true story, and I would have so many of them, but I don't have time. But anyways, what I want to tell you, I guess, with this story is that the embassy will not pay for your medical expenses. The insurance company, and you do need travel health insurance, but again, if you are intoxicated or if you don't respect all the rules in your contract, then they won't pay. So it's a hard lesson for this young guy. Other examples of services that we can provide. And there's also a limit, of course, to the services we can provide. So sorry, guys, we cannot perform wedding ceremonies. We've been asked for that many, many times, but the answer is no. We cannot assist you with job or apartment hunting, not in our mandate. And we cannot get anyone, any Canadians, out of prison. As you probably know, prison conditions vary a lot around the world. Right now we have, that we know of, because there are certainly more, some people prefer not to tell us that they are detained or in prison, but that we know of, there are more than 1,800 Canadians at this moment imprisoned abroad. And that's a lot of people. And the thing is that the only thing we can do is make sure that they get the basic needs, which is water, food, and medication. But we cannot interfere in the legal process of in a foreign country. That takes us to the second part of the presentation. That's all about the tools we have for you to help prepare for a successful experience abroad. And your main tool is certainly is the consular website. It's travel.gc.ca, also well known as voyage.gc.ca. Are any of you familiar with the site? Have you seen it before? One. Hey, that was worth a visit. Wow. Okay. This is the homepage of the consular website. As you can see, we have posted right now some special sections for the earthquake in Japan with a travel warning in effect in some of the regions. Something's going on also in Bahrain. A travel warning has been posted there too. Libya, as you all know. And MENA, which is Middle East and North Africa, we have then again a special section of everything that's going on. And we're also keeping an eye on Yemen, on Syria, and other countries. So we'll see how things evolve, but we're certainly keeping an eye on all these countries and regions. What I would recommend is that you see a button on the right-hand side. It's subscribe to travel updates. I would recommend that you do subscribe. You just have to give your email address, and that's it. And you'll receive emails from us giving you the latest news, like the latest updates on the travel reports for your destination. So you can subscribe to the RSS feeds and just identify your destination country or countries, and you'll receive these updates from us. Now, your key tool here is certainly the country-specific travel report for your destination. I've just put here Mexico as an example, but as you can see, there are 12 sections there. It's all very up-to-date information. It's been reviewed with our staff on-site, on-the-ground, and also with security intelligence, and we also consult with like-minded countries. So this information, the information that is there, is valid and is credible information for you. As you can see, there is, in Section 2, this is where the travel warnings are posted for countries or regions, if any. This is where you'll find them in the travel report. The travel warnings are the official Government of Canada recommendation not to travel, to avoid, in fact, non-essential travel to a country or region, or at the highest level, level 4, we call, to avoid all travel to a country or region. These warnings have a direct impact on your insurance, by the way. Like if you, let's say you buy a ticket or a package, and on that day there was a warning posted on the website to avoid non-essential or all travel, and you discover it just a few days after and you decide to cancel your trip, well, chances are you won't be reimbursed by the company or whoever, the travel agencies, but insurance companies are probably not, because it is your responsibility to go and check if there is or not a travel warning for your destination. And check again before you go, like before you leave Canada, to make sure that you're okay. These travel warnings, just one more word. I was talking about regions. We try to be as specific as we can. These travel warnings are a hard decision to make because they do have an impact, of course, on the economy, on the tourism of a country, on trade, and everything else. But the priority is the safety and security of Canadians. So we try to be, like I said, as specific as we can. And you'll notice that many times the regions will be border areas between two countries, like India and Pakistan, for example, or Panama and Colombia. So this is very often where the problems are. It's at the border areas. That takes us to a very, very important service in cases of emergencies, especially like the ones we've seen recently. It's the registration of Canadians abroad. That's another service that's there for you. You can register online. It's free. It's easy. You create your own account. And basically what you do is you're telling the embassy, the Canadian embassy, that you will be in that country on such and such a date, and you give us your contact information there in your destination country and back home. So if anything happens, let's take the earthquake as an example, the first thing we do is we take the registry of Canadians. That's the first, very first thing we do, and because we ask ourselves, do we have Canadians there? And if so, who are they and where are they? So if you have registered, you're kind of on a priority list, if I may use that expression, because time is of the essence and when you have these kinds of emergency. And that's the only way we'll have to know that you are in the country. So please have a look, again, from our website. There's this button on the homepage with registration of Canadians abroad. And help us promote that service as much as you can. Tell your friends, tell your family. I wish we had money to do an advertising campaign, but we don't, so we're counting on you to help us promote that service. It can make a big difference. We do have these Smart Travel publications for you, too. They're all available also on our website on HTML and PDF formats, English and French. Free again, and if there's one that I would say you should have with you, bring with you when you travel, it's the Bon Voyage Bud. This one should be in your luggage. It has a list of all the Canadian embassies and consulates abroad and all these numbers you want to have with you. So take it with you. I think it's in your kit right there. And also take the emergency contact card. It's a wallet-sized card. It gives you, again, emergency numbers. Put it in your wallet. I hope you won't need it, but if you do, then you'll know what to do. Travel report will answer these questions about the validity of your passport. I have a friend who was stopped at the airport a few weeks ago. He was going to Brussels for a training course, 1 week. Checked his passport. Oh, my passport is valid for 2 months. I'm fine. They stopped him, wouldn't let him board the plane. Belgium has as an entry requirement that your passport must be valid for a minimum of 3 months beyond the date of your departure from that country. So he missed his training, called me, was crying, and I felt like saying, did you check your travel report? But it was too late anyways, but check it out. And also, I guess you have a portion of this these sessions that talks about vaccination or health issues. But then again, the travel report will give you information on that. So just to summarize, travel health insurance, I think I've told you that, I think so. And I've told you you need insurance. Protect your passport. Make photocopies of all your travel documents and leave copies at home. It can really help in case of emergency. When you travel with prescription medications or even vitamins, make sure you keep them in the original containers. Don't put everything in one box. That could mean a lot of trouble when you try to explain to customs officers what's in there, what's the blue, what's the orange, what's the yellow. Not a good idea. Dual citizenship. I guess some of you do have dual citizenship. I see these. Okay. If you're going back to your country of origin, I would recommend that you contact the embassy of that country before you go and check what is your status in the country. Like we had cases of some guys especially who had surprises like having to do their military service and couldn't leave the country for 1 year, 2 years, because they had to do their military service and didn't have a clue about that. So just check it out. And we do have, by the way, a publication on dual citizenship. Illegal drugs. Most of Canadians in prison abroad are there for drug-related offenses, and did I ask you to guess where they are? 75% of them?
United States.
75% of them. But the other countries I heard, we also have Canadians in prison there. What it means is that the zero tolerance policy is not a joke. It's really it's being applied strictly, and especially in some states in the U.S. and then local culture and love. Learn as much as you can. And we have on our website what we call cultural insights. Go and check it out. We have these insights for about 200 countries in the world, and they're very, very interesting. So I would recommend that you have a look at it also. Lots of homework for you guys, but it's worth it. If you don't find the answer to your questions or you need a special piece of advice, here's a 1-800 number for you. Or send me an email at travel@international.gc.ca. And also, we like to get your feedback, so don't hesitate. Tell us about your experience. We love to hear about your experience abroad. I want to thank you very much. Yes, and bon voyage to all of you. Enjoy.
There we go. Hi, Mac people. I know there's a whole bunch of people from Dietetics who are going to Barbados. That's the news I was told last night. I've been asked, because I have extensive experience in foreign experiences. I've been to Toronto, so I know about foreign cultures. So I'm here to talk to you about them. Let's talk about this. First of all, some of you, when you leave, may get some forms. You need to fill some medical forms, which can include a variety of things depending on where you're going and which agency is sending you. Some of them can be very easily filled up, which is just a little piece, half a piece of paper. Others are like several pieces of paper. You need to know physicians don't like doing those things. So make sure you're nice to the physician when you make the appointment and to the receptionist, because they won't be happy. But the important thing is you also need to know that that's called a third-party physical. And a third-party physical is essentially a physical that you don't really need for your own health, but something that somebody else is asking for. Therefore, it is not paid by any Medicare system across Canada. Excuse me, and for those people who are from other countries and have the University Blue Cross, it is not paid by the University Blue Cross either. So if you go to any of the physicians, the ranges can be between 40 for us at McGill Student Health, to up to $200 to have your physical and your form filled. And you may be stuck, because if you don't plan ahead and get yourself together soon enough, then what happens is you may not get an appointment except on an emergency basis, and then they may, you know, suck you dry for money. So be prepared for that, so get ready ahead of time. Also, if you need to have some tests, you may have to pay for those. If you need to have an x-ray done, you may have to pay for those as well. So be prepared, it could be costly. Vaccines very much depends on the country where you're going. Depends on as to what you will need and what you will require. You may or may not require malaria pills. Some may have to be given up to a month or a month and a half before you leave, so again, you need to plan ahead of time. Depending on where you go, so at Student Health, for example, it's like I'm making a commercial for Student Health, isn't it? At Student Health, we just sell our products just slightly above cost, so it doesn't cost you more than the actual vaccine is. However, if you go for some of the other clinics, you might be lucky, and they may also just give you above cost, but some of them may also charge you a fee to open a chart, which can be costly as well. So you need to ask before you make your appointment what exactly you're going to have to pay and how much you're going to have to pay for. We give all the vaccine except for Japanese encephalitis and rabies. And that's basically because both of those vaccines are very, very expensive. And so we don't carry them. We can get them for you, but we don't carry them. And it's important to remember that the SSMU plan, for those of you who are undergrads and who are on the SSMU plan, that it does pay for $300 worth of your vaccines. So it's a good deal if you have to travel and you're not using the vaccine. Medications. You may want to get some medication for traveler's diarrhea. You don't need to go very far. Well, maybe further than Toronto. But, you know, I went to Spain. You were talking about Spain. I went to Spain. I had diarrhea during the whole time I was there. Just a change of food does it for me. I don't know if it'll do the same for you, but it does it for me. So you need to be prepared. There's a vaccine that exists, but you need to take it sufficiently long before you leave for it to be effective. If not, then bring yourself some medication, and you can also get some antibiotics. And it's again a prescription that you can get. The nurses will give you those prescriptions. They have what's called collective orders so that they can give you what you need without having to see a doctor at student health again. If you think you're going to have rash, and you probably will, you should at least buy a 1% over-the-counter cortisone cream to help you with that rash. Antihistamines, in case you get, you know, allergic to something or another, is a good idea. If you get fever or pain, ibuprofen, in other words, Advil, if I'm going to use a commercial name. But you could, find that in a variety of places. An antibiotic ointment, in case you get a cut or something, is a good idea. Malaria pills, if you're going to a place where malaria pill is, and where malaria exists, and altitude sickness, if you need to, if you're going high up, you may need some pills, some medication for that. So think about that as well and plan ahead. If you do take medication, as was mentioned, keep them in the original container. If you're bringing a lot, in other words, if you're going away for a long time, and you can't, you don't want to bring like 10 bottles. Make sure that you put the specific pills individually in a baggie with the original little insert that's in the bottle, or one of the original bottles in with it, so that they can actually see what the medication is and what it contains. If you need, and if you are going to travel to a country where it's not, you're worried about the sanitary condition, you may want to bring syringes. At that point, you can buy syringes, but it's again a good idea to see a physician and to get a certificate saying that you are carrying these syringes and why you are carrying them, so that you are protected for that. And it's important to remember that some of the over-the-counter medications in Canada may not necessarily be legal in the other countries. So it's important before you leave to check which medication that you're bringing to make sure that you're buying, that you have proof. So that if you are needing or you want to use an over-the-counter medication that's available in Canada, but it is not available or it's illegal in another country, then you need a prescription. So make sure that you go ask your doctor and the doctor writes your prescription, and then you have that box to prove that you're taking the medication and that it's prescribed by a physician. Medical kit, depending on where you go and how remote it is, you may want to bring yourself some stuff in case you have some problems. So you may want to bring some dressings in case you get cuts. If you're going to travel in places where there is malaria, you need to have DEET to get rid of the bugs. If there's cockroaches, well, forget about those. You just learn to live with them. At least that's what I did when I lived in New York. I had little pals. I had my dog, which was my pet, and my cockroaches. Kept me from being lonely. And a whole city of people. And I didn't go for martinis because at that point, what's it called? The thing that infects in the city they always drink. The Cosmo didn't exist then, so, I had to do without Cosmo. Make sure that you get stuff to spray on your clothes. Sunscreen is important if you're going to hang out in water and hang out in the sun, and important also if you're going to take some of the malaria pills or some other medications, because some of the medications will sensitize you to the sun. So that means that it will get you more likely to get a sunburn. And that could be quite painful. I don't know if you've ever had a bad sunburn. I'm sure none of you have. I have. It's uncomfortable. First day of my job at the university where I went, which was Ottawa U, I worked in the summer as a medical student. Horrendous sunburn. Had to leave every now and then from my lab so that I could just go stand against a cold marble slab to relieve the itch. You don't want to be doing that when you're traveling. Thermometer. And believe you me, most of you don't have thermometers. I know I work at student health. And I ask you when you come in, did you take your temperature? And you look at me blankly. So I know you don't have a thermometer. Buy one before you leave. Disposable gloves. Not that you want to be sticking your fingers into anything, but you do want to protect yourself when you're picking things up that could be contaminated with blood or other products. Syringe needles, mosquito nets, portable water filters, depending on where you go. Because some of you are going to go to, a remote place. Drugs, as mentioned, is a no-no. I mean, you don't want to be arrested, granted, just basically because you don't want it to be your residence abroad. It's far from being, open concept with a bathroom en suite. You're not going to get that in a jail. But more importantly, if you're on drugs or you're drunk, your judgment is just not so good. And you might end up into a really difficult situation. You may end up having sex when you don't want to have sex, which is called sexual assault. That may not make you so happy. May lead to pregnancy, may lead to STIs. You may also make decisions about who you will not take lip from and get into fights, which is also not so good. So, think about it before you do drugs. You might want not to get into those situations. If you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, or queer, or questioning, and you want to sort of explore your sexuality while you're overseas, might not be a good idea in certain countries where it's illegal. And you might want to check Amnesty International for the sites where not only is it illegal and you could be arrested, but you could be put to death. So check, because sex may not be what you want to do at that point. On the plane or driving long distances, if you have some sort of a clotting problem, make sure you get up and walk around and drink plenty of fluids. But even if you don't, do it anyways, because you can get blood clots in your legs, and then they can move and go to your lungs and to your brain, and then you can get a stroke. And again, that's not very enjoyable when you're traveling. Alcohol and caffeine will make that worse, and it may manifest up to 2 weeks after your flight. If that happens, seek medical advice right away. That is a medical emergency. Don't hang out and wait and see, or wait till you come back home. Hemorrhoids are a form of varicose veins, and they form a place where you can clot. Worst that will happen is it will be hard and painful to sit for a while, but it is uncomfortable, so you want to try to avoid that, so get up and walk around. Eating while there, boil it, cook it, peel it, or forget it is the rule that you should avoid. Essentially, because you can pick up a variety of bacteria, so if it's a salad or a raw vegetable, don't eat it. If it's a bottle, if it's water, make sure it's in a bottle or it's been filtered or treated. Remember, ice cubes are water, So your pina colada or your Manhattan with, Cosmopolitan with the ice cubes, that'll do it. That'll give you the runs for a few days. You want to stay away from that. If they're hot, you have to be recently cooked. If they're hot, under the lights, like in the cafeteria, with mayonnaise food, don't eat. Bad. You want to avoid that. And of course, wash your hands before you eat. Didn't your mother tell you that? And if she didn't, she should have. And if she did, you should listen to her. Otherwise, you'll get into trouble. Rehydration. If you do get diarrhea, there's a variety of solutions that you can drink. Don't just drink plain water. Drink that Gatorade stuff, which is vile in my mind, but some of you like. Drink it. That's what you need. It's water with salt, with sugar, and with salt in it. Mix it, and it's what helps you get rehydrated. There's the medications that are listed there. Take your antibiotic. And if it lasts more than 1 week, or it's bloody, or there's fever, then go see a doctor. Don't hang out. If you get heat stroke, try to prevent it, first of all. So wear loose clothing, a big hat. Don't hang out in the sun too long. Don't exercise mid-noon. Don't go run. That's just not the best thing to do. Drink plenty of fluids and drink regularly. And this describes what heat stroke is, and you all have the slides in your paper, so you can just follow that. Altitude sickness, this tells you again what it's about and gives you a rough idea and gives you what the symptoms are. So you need to climb up slowly, otherwise you will feel altitude sickness. I mean, I went up into the Rockies near Denver to ski, and I felt like a dog. I went around and went for 3 days. And that's essentially a mild form of altitude sickness. And when you're doing that, you get short of breath and it's hard to do things. So you have to go slowly. Malaria, mosquito repellent, early evenings are the worst time. Mosquito nets while sleeping, and take your pills if you've been given pills. Sex, don't have it. And at the very least, use condoms. just basically because when you guys come back in the fall, we do a lot of testing for STIs and we do a lot of pregnancy tests, believe me. So, don't have it. Unless you really, really have to. And if you do it by yourself. Oh. Mental health, it's always a culture shock. Even going to Toronto is a culture shock. And it will affect you. And it will make the first few weeks really tough. So, you know, don't underestimate that there'll be some culture shock and it'll be difficult and it'll be tough. And we see that. I mean, you know, people come to Canada, it's not that difficult. It's not, you think, that foreign of a country, but for some people it is. And they find it difficult. And we deal with that, student health all the time. And if you're not coping, talk to somebody, even if it's just the pal that you're traveling with. You know, talk to them. Say, I'm having some difficulty. There's probably some more senior person around that you can talk to as well. Don't wait. The longer you wait, the worse it gets. And the further we have to dig you out of a hole. So it's really important. Coming back, don't bring back anything you shouldn't, including an STI and a pregnancy. So that means no drugs, no endangered species stuff, and no diseases. Seeing a doctor when you come back, you should see a doctor if you have diarrhea or stomach cramps. If you've had sex, get your STI check. If you have an unusual episode of fever when you come back, to check for malaria. If you have unusual rashes, and you can have unusual rashes, if you're going to, you know, some jungle somewhere, like inner city Toronto, you may get something called a box fly bite. Well, box flies are really kinky, funky stuff. And what they do is they bite into your skin and the larva starts developing and it makes a red lump and then it needs to make a hole in the skin and it does, from which it breathes. And if you actually look at it, you can see the little scab, because it looks like a scab, come and go and come and go. And it's actually the larva coming to surface and breathe. It's really easy to treat, actually. What you do is you put Vaseline over the hole and they suffocate. So it's no big deal. But it's kind of funky. So anything else that's weird, like the box fly bite, come in, because it's fun to see. These are some of the resources that you can go to that will provide you some information about traveling and health information. Some of it is Canadian, some of it is CDC, so American. And as I mentioned, the Amnesty International will give you some information about a variety of things regarding human rights. And again, not that I want you, don't want you to do this, but try not to get in trouble regarding human rights. I mean, you're there to do things and to help people, but only to a certain point. You're not there to fight their battles, because you're going to get into trouble if you do. So try not to do that. I know it's sometimes hard, but try not to. And that's it.
Okay, so that's a tough act to follow. I'm sorry I'm not as funny. I'm going to talk about, as I said before, everything else, so from finances to credit to insurance. Generally some not so fun things, but things that would be good to think about before you leave. So the first thing is just to kind of situate why you're here. So everyone so far knows that before leaving on your international activity, you have to attend a pre-departure orientation session. So that's the first step. But the other two things that you need to do, some of you hopefully have already done this, but others haven't. The first is you need approval for your international activity. So for those who are going on a bilateral exchange, you already know who, you already have your approval. Others who are doing internships, you might need to speak to your faculty advisors or your program advisors to get final approval for your activity. And once you have approval for your activity, the next step will be to do the final requirement, which is to fill out the travel registry. So for those of you, has anyone filled out their travel registry already? If you have, raise your hand. It's not up. Okay, so for some of you it's up, for some of you it's not. Again, that will be with your faculty advisors, so just know that before you go, you need to fill it out, and if you don't have it up, you'll need to speak to them to have them created, because they're created individually for you. This is what it looks like. You'll need to fill out basic information about who you are and your emergency contact information, It's basically lots of information that might seem like we're asking for quite a bit of information, but it's really just to get two things. One is, for example, if you think about what was happening in Japan, knowing how to reach the students in times of crisis, having the emergency contact information that's up to date, knowing the kind of date of departure and date of return of students is really helpful in terms of facilitating that contact. And it's also a good step for you to make sure that you know these things as well, because they're the kind of things that you want to know before you leave and not only when you're abroad. So basic emergency contact information, your travel information as well. You'll need to provide medical insurance information, and I'll speak more about that later, but this is really important for you to get a sense of what you are and are not covered for, so please do take this section seriously. Your travel activities, so this is just to let your advisor know exactly where you'll be going, what you'll be doing, and the contact information for your host organization abroad. So that might be a university, it might also be an NGO or an organization you're doing an internship with or that you're doing research with as well. For those of you who are going on a group, so for example the Barbados Field Study, you'll have a group itinerary. For those of you who are going individually, this is where you fill out when you're going, when you're coming back, so that the university knows when you're back and doesn't have to worry about you anymore. And at the end, when you've filled it all out, there will be an agreement form. Please read the agreement form. There's a lot of information here that is important for you to sign, not just because we want to know that you've signed it, but we want to know that you've read it, because the information, again, here is really a lot of the things I'll be covering for the next few minutes that I have, and it's information that is important for you in order to ensure that you're properly prepared for when you go abroad. So the first thing, academic credit. For those of you who are going on exchange, you may have heard you need to do this before you go. You need to make sure that you get all this in order before you leave and to see what kind of criteria your faculty has for recognizing credit at other universities. Please do this before and not after, because if you come back after your international activity, it might be too late to retroactively get permission. The same goes for internships. If you think your faculty offers credits for internships, again, this should be done before you leave and not after to ensure that you do get the credit that you would be entitled to. And during your stay, if things change, if, for example, the courses that are being offered at your university are canceled or are changed, let your advisor know as soon as possible. So don't wait until you come back in January, February. That might be too late to get authorization for something that you could have received credit for. For finances, preparing a budget is really important. And it's an important step for basically wherever you travel around the world. Some regions might seem like it's more basic, so if you're going, for example, to Paris or you're going to New York, it might seem like it's the same thing as in Montreal. But the challenge is that when you're going somewhere for a short period of time, if you're going for 4 months or you're going for a year, you might have a harder time finding things at the same price you do in Montreal. So if you're subletting, you might find that prices are higher. If you're in a place and you don't really know how to get around, you might find that you're taking taxis for the first month, especially if you're going to be in parts of Western Africa or Eastern Africa and you don't really know there's a reliable bus system. So these kind of things are just really important, because you need to really prepare, maybe speak to other students who've been in the region. The breakout sessions are a really great opportunity for you to get better senses of how much things cost. So just to keep in mind that the cost of your international activity is rarely just the cost of your flight. There are many other costs that will kind of happen next year. So please keep those in mind so you don't have any unanticipated crises. In terms of money and banking, it would be important to get some foreign currency before your departure. So for anyone who has ever arrived in their destination country at 3 a.m., sometimes the banks might not be open at that time. If you need to take a taxi to get to your hostel or to get to your dorms or whatever, you might need to have that cash on you right away. So try to get some money before you leave and have that available when you arrive. And also take more than one source of money. So if you just go with one credit card, that credit card might not be accepted. You may want to have a debit card, have some cash, have potentially some American cash as well as the foreign currency where you're going. Again, this is a good question for your breakout sessions to find out how these things work. In terms even of your debit cards, just your PIN number. Sometimes in certain countries, the limit is you can only have 4 numbers. So if your PIN number is 6 or 7 digits, you might find yourself unable to withdraw cash. So check out these things before you go so that you can take those precautions right away. And for those of you who have concerns now about money and finance and your budget, you can always consult the financial aid website, which is up on the screen, and there are some possible funding opportunities, including the travel, the mobility awards. For insurance, you've already heard some information about it. What's important for you to know is that every student is responsible to ensure that they are sufficiently covered for the duration of their stay. And what sufficiently covered means can really vary from student to student. So unfortunately, we can't give you one answer for the entire group. It will really depend on where you're going. The first thing is if you're going to be going for an exchange, for example, for 8 months or for 10 months, your provincial or your territorial health coverage might be suspended if you're gone for too long. So for example, in Quebec, you have 183 days to be out of the province. After that, your coverage might be suspended. So before you leave, make sure that you contact your health provider to see if you can get an extension because you're doing an academic activity abroad. So that's something to consider, especially for longer or extended stays. In terms of travel health policy coverage, it's important to ask the following questions. So emergency health coverage, emergency evacuation coverage, trip cancellation, these are all different things. So if you thought they were the same, you need to know that they're all different and they're all things that you need. So in addition to knowing what you do need, you also have to know what is excluded. So many insurance policies will have limitations, exclusions, for example, intoxication and falling over balconies is one, but there are many others. Extreme sports are often excluded as well, like scuba diving or skydiving. And so you need to know what is excluded and what isn't excluded. And as was mentioned before, travel warnings are also very important. So before you leave, there's a travel advisory that's been issued. You won't be covered for the time that you're abroad. And so just to understand, if you're a Canadian student, you're automatically enrolled in the SSMU plan. However, some students have the option to opt out. So it's not a guarantee that if you're a Canadian student, you're covered by that plan. International students are covered by a separate plan, and you'll see the information up there. Both those plans offer travel insurance. However, the terms can vary from one to the other. If you're an international student, you'd have to opt in to this extended travel coverage. If you're under the SSMU plan, it's automatic unless you've opted out. The basic takeaway message is to contact your insurance provider before you leave in order to find out whether you're covered for the duration of your internship, depending on the region you're going to, the activity you're going to be doing. It's just really important to speak to them before you go to make sure that you're adequately covered. And for anyone who is in a country where a travel advisory is issued, so with the ASEC plan, with the International Students plan, also with travel cuts just from the SMU building across the street, any of those plans, if you are abroad and a travel advisory is issued, so not a level one or level two, but once you go to level three or level four, your insurance coverage will no longer be the full coverage that you were entitled to before the travel advisory. So even if everything was okay before you left, if once you're there, there's a change in the travel advisory, your insurance will be affected. The range of how it will affect depends on each plan and on each person, on the type of injury you might sustain, but just knowing that your coverage is going to be limited is something really important to consider and one more reason to take the advisory seriously and potentially to leave the country. These are just examples of policy restrictions. So for those of you, once you have your plan, when you speak to your insurance providers, you can ask them these kind of questions. These are pretty standard. So if you are sick before you leave, you might not be eligible for coverage of that kind of injury when you're abroad. The same for voluntary exposure to any kind of risk. And so what's important to know from this is that most likely no one here is going on exchange to engage in some rebel activity. However, if you're in a place where there's a demonstration, I mean, demonstrations do happen very often in very many cities around the world, but just association with that can be problematic. So, for example, if you're an intern working with a human rights organization and your whole group is going to participate in a demonstration, that could be problematic in that if you happen to fall and trip during that demonstration, you might not be eligible to have that broken leg treated under your insurance plan. So it's not the kind of extreme situations, it's just the small things that you need to be aware of and that might affect your insurance coverage. You have in your handout a list of questions that you might want to consider when you speak to your insurance provider just to see if these are the kind of things that are offered in your plan. And while abroad, the best thing is to locate the nearest hospital or clinic when you arrive. So it's not when you're unconscious that you want to be finding that hospital, it's before that happens. should that happen, and to have that information on you so that you know what to do when the crisis happens. In the same way, tell your friends, people who you're with, if you're traveling in a group, what to do in case of an emergency, for insurance plans that require you to contact them before seeking service. If you let a friend know, if anything happens to me, call this number and speak to the insurance provider. Having those kind of plans set up before something happens are really important. And in case an emergency should arise, please keep your receipts. It's the most important thing, original invoices, in order to ensure you can be properly reimbursed when you come home. Cultural awareness is going to be covered in the breakout sessions, but culture shock was mentioned just before, and I'll just take this opportunity to emphasize it one more time. In terms of culture shock, when you're going away for a long period of time, it's inevitable, it will happen to everyone, but this is where the drug conversation comes back in. And in times of more kind of less stable mental health, you might be making decisions that you wouldn't normally make. You might be more tempted than you would under normal circumstances. But I cannot emphasize enough how serious the no drug thing is. And just understand, when you're going and traveling abroad, especially for those of you who are going on exchange and you're going to be in a university setting with other people, people who are from that country, who seem to know how things work, who tell you that in certain places it's fine, no problem, everyone does it, that doesn't apply to you. And so even if everyone else is doing it, it's not an excuse for you. And the reason, there are many reasons, but if I could just give you one, because I don't have much time, is that in many countries, people who will be doing drugs, you can have a very small elite who can do these drugs and get away with it. And if something happens and they were caught, and you, as a group you're caught, and you're kind of go to the police station, those people, your friends, might have very powerful parents and parents' friends who have special privileges who can get them out of jail, but those privileges will most likely not extend to their son or daughter's exchange friend. So that privilege doesn't extend to you. You're not immune from the local laws. You've heard it before. So please, if I could just give one note of advice, drugs are an absolute no-no, and I say this from seeing things in the past, it's just not worth it. And this I won't cover because we're running out of time and was said kind of quite clearly before, and also in your breakout sessions. During your stay, just in terms of very practical things, please check in. If you're an intern, you might want to let your faculty advisor know that you've arrived safely in your host country. Maybe let your parents know that you've arrived. Even though you're away and you're not thinking about your parents or your family for 4 months, 8 months, whatever, they're thinking about you and they're worried about you. So do them a favor, check in, let them know that you have arrived, and try to check in regularly just to make everyone at home more calm. They'll really appreciate it. In terms of emergency contact, the best thing is to leave wherever you're staying in your host country, leave your emergency contact information at home with them, and vice versa. Leave with your parents the emergency contact information for either the university or your host organization. That information will be very helpful if anything should ever arise. Regular updates, and of course, check your McGill emails regularly because you might miss information that would otherwise be going to your McGill account. In terms of what to do in case of an emergency, again, these are things that you don't want to think about when the situation arises, so please take the time, even if it's when you're on the plane heading to your host country, just to think about what you would do in case of an emergency. And you have the steps, again, in your handouts. We don't need to go through it now, but just try to think about what you would do because, as has been mentioned many times before, the times of an emergency are the worst times to be thinking about these things. You heard before about a first aid kit, so in addition to your first aid kit, we like to encourage you to also have a safe travel toolkit. In this toolkit, you should be having photocopies of your important documents, so in case anything was ever lost or stolen or misplaced, or you happen to have important documents in your luggage, which you should never do, always in your carry-on. I don't know who's lost luggage before, so anything important goes in your carry-on. Nevertheless, if you have important documents, they should all be photocopied, and you want to have a copy of that again with maybe your emergency contact back at home with your parents, and just maybe have a couple of copies, and sometimes keep these things with you in case you ever need the information. Especially, for example, your insurance provider's hotline or the DFA hotline, these are things you want to keep with you at all times. Basically, to summarize, there's been a lot of information so far, but to give you a sense of kind of all of the information we're giving you, it might be boiled down into the following. The first and most important is before you leave, you need to complete the travel registry on Minerva. So that's number one. Number two, check the passport and visa requirements for your host country. Don't forget that in addition to a valid passport, you might need a valid student visa or a work visa or a volunteer visa. So make sure you check that out before you go. Consult your insurance provider to see what you are properly covered for. Photocopy your important documents under your Safe Travel Toolkit. Contact a travel health clinic. Prepare a budget. Really, you'll be surprised when you start really getting down to the details of what you might find. Learn about your destination country. Put your credit cards, ATM cards, PIN numbers, and everything in order. Register with your local embassy and consulate. For those who aren't Canadian, you can find similar options with your countries. And finally, understand your responsibilities to McGill and your host institution. Remember, this is meant to be a really great exchange for everyone involved. So the next step is going to be the regional breakout sessions. You'll see the room listed up there. What you need to know is everyone in your application packages, you have a pink slip. On that pink slip, you will need to, on the back of it, there's an evaluation form. So at the end of your breakout sessions, we ask that you please fill out the evaluation form. And when the breakout sessions are over, there will be staff in each room who will pick up these forms from you. And this is a confirmation that you've attended the breakout session today. And after the breakout sessions, there will be food, so you can stick around and talk to other people going to the same countries as you.